Broadcasting to you from Alaska, the last frontier. Welcome to the Arctic Free Press. Political perspectives and observations from the top of the world. So this is episode 2 of this podcast, and I'm your host, Jay Chaya. Now let's talk about what's really going on in the world out there today. So, welcome to episode 2 of the Arctic Free Press. As always, I'm your host, Jay Chaya. So I thought what we'd do today is we would cover the latest on COVID-19. We're going to do a worldwide update. We're going to look at some issues going on in a couple of countries. We're going to talk about the current U.S. statistics. We'll talk about my opinion on why I think some states are opening too early. And then we're going to go into something a little different. We're going to talk about some information about some antibody studies that have come out from France and Spain and here in the U.S. We'll cover a little bit about some of the job losses in the U.S. And then at the end, we're going to cover some election news. There were some special elections for the U.S. Congress. And then some interesting information about UFOs from the Department of Defense. So with that being said, let's get started. So worldwide, the situation with COVID-19 it's not getting worse, but it's not really getting better either. We're kind of like in this in-between period right now. You know, on average, the U.S. has anywhere from 15 to 25,000 cases a day. So that's just here in the United States. Worldwide, there's anywhere from 75 to 100,000 new cases per day. So right now, the top five countries for cases of COVID-19 are the U.S., Spain, Russia, the United Kingdom, and Italy. Brazil, France, Germany, Turkey, and Iran round out the top 10. So overall in the U.S., on average, you're seeing anywhere from, 16 to 22,000 cases per day, and anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 deaths per day. The U.S. averages roughly 1,500 deaths on any given day. So looking at the countries, though, elsewhere, places like Spain, Italy, they're definitely kind of over the hill in terms of bending the curve for the virus. You know, the Spaniards are still averaging, 1,000, 1,500 cases per day, but those numbers have been decreasing, as has their death toll. Currently, 27,321 people in Spain have died from the coronavirus, but those numbers are trending downward daily. The UK is still kind of getting to the top of that curve, as is Russia. In fact, Russia is kind of in a bad situation. Russia is averaging anywhere from 9 to 14,000 new cases per day. Now, the weird thing about Russia is their death rate is really low still. They claim they're averaging less than 1% mortality rate for the virus, which is just, it's hard to believe because there's no country in the world that's averaging 1% total mortality. You know, even China had higher than that when China was still keeping statistics for the virus. As everyone knows, or if you haven't heard by now, China quit releasing data to the rest of the world almost 2 months ago. They basically just stopped. One day they said, no, you know what? There's no more coronavirus here, and nobody dies from it anymore. So the numbers from China aren't really realistic, and I'm starting to wonder if the same thing is going on in Russia. I mean, their daily case total, that seems pretty realistic. 9, 10, 12, 14,000 cases per day. I would believe that, but these daily death tolls, 60, 70, maybe 100 people, it doesn't make sense compared to the rest of the world. So I don't think they're being honest with the way that they're looking at this. So that's kind of what's going on around the world. Now, I actually wanted to highlight two articles that I had found. One of them is from Sky News, which is a British publication, and it talks about how in Mexico City, Mexico, the true death toll from the virus is being significantly undercounted. Several government officials speaking anonymously have all said that the mortality rate is five times the published figure for Mexico. Now, if you go look at the statistics for Mexico, it says that they have 4,220 total deaths from the virus, with about half of that coming from Mexico City. If this report is to be believed, then there are almost 10,000 dead alone in Mexico City. So what the article says is that a number of government officials have said that the death toll in Mexico City, the second largest city in Latin America, is 5 times the published rate. What the world knows about Mexico, according to these officials, is that Mexico is successfully taming the epidemic. That is not true, and in fact, the situation is far worse. Now, that is a statement from those various government officials, and they're speaking anonymously, so they don't want to be on record saying what they're saying, but that's pretty much what they're trying to claim, is that the death toll in Mexico City is significantly higher. Additionally, they say that the rate of hospitalizations is also far higher than the government is willing to admit. So that is kind of the situation, what's going on in Mexico, or at least one news report talking about the situation in Mexico. Additionally, there is a report out of Moscow from Russia. And what it says is that this is actually on CNN International. So I know people have issues with CNN because of political bias. They have other people have issues with MSNBC or Fox News. You know, I'm not here to talk about what source is, you know, liberal or conservative, what source is not telling the truth. I'm just here to talk about what I'm reading. So this report is actually entitled Why Moscow Didn't Count 60% of Suspected COVID-19 Deaths. Now, this is on CNN International, and it's actually from today, May the 14th. And what the article says is that Moscow's health department is claiming that it is not underreporting COVID-19 fatalities, saying that its data was absolutely open. Apparently, they felt the need to issue that statement after several international organizations claimed that Russia, and in particularly the city of Moscow, were not honestly stating how many people had died. So in a statement on Wednesday, the Moscow Health Department said authorities conducted autopsies on 100% of suspected coronavirus victims and confirmed that 639 people died directly of the virus in April. So in other words, what they're saying is 640 people in Moscow died of the virus. So that could be true, but later on in the article, it talks that the city registered 11,846 death certificates that month, which is 20% higher compared to a 10-year average of deaths for the month of April. So the death rate was 20% higher in Moscow, but they're saying that there were only 600 deaths from coronavirus. Those two statistics don't add up. One of those statistics is false. Independent researchers have looked into the statistics coming out of Moscow, and they have concluded that over 4,000 people likely have died from the coronavirus in Moscow alone. Now, the problem with that 4,000, now that's Johns Hopkins and some other institutes. The problem with that is that independent, non-Russian agencies and investigatory groups have said that the death toll in Moscow alone is 4,000. Just Moscow, not the rest of Russia. The problem with that is that the official Russian figures say that there are only 2,300 deaths currently in all of Russia, the entire country. So somebody's not telling the truth. I'm a little bit more inclined to believe international bodies, medical bodies that are conducting these investigations. The death toll coming out of Russia is a statistical outlier. It is definitely different than every other country you look at. Every other country that has a mass outbreak like this is having anywhere from a 4% to 7% death rate to as high as 15-16% in the cases of, you know, let's say France or Belgium. You know, Germany, which is considered one of the best equipped countries in the world medically for any kind of medical emergency, they still are suffering over a 6% death rate. Yet somehow Russia is only having 1% total mortality. It just doesn't make sense. You know, I don't necessarily believe that. So we'll have to see what, you know, comes in the future out of Russia. But as of right now, I would say that their numbers for the death toll are definitely incorrect. So anyway, so let's move on. you know, besides that, you know, that's kind of, like I said, the situation that's going on, you know, around the world. I touched on the U.S. for just a minute, but I kind of want to circle back and hit on that again for a second. So, you know, right now the U.S. has just over 1 million active cases of coronavirus currently in the U.S. We've had, you know, something along the lines of 300,000 people recover, and the death toll right now is at 87,000. So the U.S. mortality rate for total cases versus total deaths is hovering right about 5.96%. Now, that doesn't mean that if everyone caught it, 5.9 or 6% of the population would die. But currently, we know for a fact that if you catch it right now, today, the odds of you dying are roughly about 6%. We know that for a fact because we know exactly the best data we have is we take our total number of cases that we have confirmed, because that's data that we have verified, and we multiply it by total deaths to get a percentage. And when you do that, when you multiply the total U.S. cases by the total deaths, you get that 5.9 or 6%, like I said. So we know that those numbers are verifiable. Now, the death rate for the virus probably is lower than 6% overall. If everyone got it, you know, and we went back and looked after all 330 million Americans had it, it probably would be lower than 6%. But today, with the data that we can verify, and this is a really important thing. This is something I keep getting into arguments with on social media and with friends, and I keep trying to tell people, you know, because a lot of times you'll hear people say, oh, well, the death toll has got to be lower. Well, not necessarily. You know, there's no guarantee that it's lower because we don't know how many people have been infected. What we do know is we do know how many cases that we have tested for that have been positive. We do know how many cases we've tested for that have been positive, how many people have died, and how many people have recovered, and how many people still have the virus. So those are verifiable numbers. And with those verifiable numbers, we can get a rough estimate of what the current death rate is. And that is how we arrive at that 6% number. So in addition to that, the number actually went up for a while. When I started tracking this back in March, the death rate was roughly about 3%. So if you caught COVID-19, you had roughly a 3.5% chance of dying from it. Between March and now, the second week of May, the number has gone up to that 5.96%. It's kind of right on the cusp. And it has stayed there for over a week. That is the longest since I started tracking the virus back in March that the number has stayed at the same level of mortality. So we have actually kind of hit a ceiling, so to speak. But I think that as some of these states begin to reopen up across the country, that death mortality rate, and the total number of cases are going to start going up again. And the reason I base that on is I'm looking at graphs of daily new cases in the state of Florida versus daily new cases in the state of Texas. And the reason I chose Texas and Florida is because both states are in the South. Both states have a relatively warm climate. Both states are similar in population. Texas is a bit bigger. You know, it's about 20-25% bigger in terms of population, but they have similar ethnic makeups. They have, you know, similar weather, similar climate, and they've had roughly a similar level of outbreak in both states. Now, the one key difference is that Florida, in many cases, is still locked down, whereas Texas opened up a few weeks ago. So if I'm looking at this graph, you know, most states in the U.S. locked down roughly the last week of March. So roughly the 22nd to the 25th of March, a lot of states started locking down. And what you see in Florida, if you look at the statistics, is that on March the 24th, Florida only had 240 cases on that day. Now, for the next 2 weeks of lockdown, they kept going up, right? So the numbers kept going up all the way until April the 6th, when they had 1,279 cases. Now, on that day, 2 weeks into it, the cases started coming down. And since that day, they've only had a single day where the number of daily cases exceeded that 1,279. Every other day since then, the cases have been lower and lower and lower. Now, there have been little spikes, you know. One day they'll have, you know, 700 cases. The next day they'll have 900. But consistently, the trend is for lower and lower and lower cases all the way till today, where they had 479 cases. So Florida remaining locked down, or remaining mostly locked down, has bent that curve on new cases, and you can see it dropping. You know, you can, if you look at the graph, you can see it's dropping every single day. The percentage of new cases goes down a little bit more, and the number of infected has also dropped. Currently, there's 33,480 people in Florida that are infected with coronavirus, which corresponds to the same numbers they had in mid-April. So they're kind of going back down towards their mid-April numbers. So what this tells me is that Florida, by remaining locked down, has bent the curve to where they were averaging daily cases, you know, in the 8, 9, 1200, you know, 800, 900, 1200 per day all the way through the early part of April. And then, like I said, they had that one spike on April the 17th that was higher than any other day, but every day since then, they've been under that level. In fact, to give you a good approximation of the difference between Florida and Texas, Florida had 12 days prior to May the 1st where they were above 1,000 cases per day. Since May the 1st, they haven't had a single day where they've been above 1,000 cases. In fact, every day they've been roughly in the 500 to 700 range. So they've been, you know, like I said, they've been trending down every day since May. Now let's go look at Texas. Texas locked down roughly around the same time frame, 23rd, 24th, 25th of March, somewhere around there. We'll say the 25th. On the 25th of March, the state of Texas had 132 confirmed cases that day, new cases that day. And for the next 2 weeks, the cases went up, as they would, and I'll explain that in a minute. So that by April the 9th, Texas was all the way up to 1,360 cases. Every day after that, Texas had lower amounts. Now, 1,361 was the highest number of cases they had up till what I'm going to talk about in a minute. So on April the 19th, the state of Texas reopened their state parks and a few other businesses, and then a week later, they opened up a lot of businesses. So that would take them all the way out to, let's say, the 25th of April. On the 25th of April, they opened up many, many businesses. Still not everything, but most things. And on that day, they had 1,025 new cases. Here's the problem with the state of Texas. Since May the 1st, they have had 10 out of 13 days where they exceeded 1,000 new daily cases. So 10 out of 13, that translates to roughly 75, every day since March, or since the beginning of May, 75% of those days have seen cases above 1,000. Prior to May the 1st, the state of Texas registered 5 days out of 45 days with more than 1,000 cases. So in 90% of all days prior to May the 1st, Texas had less than 1,000 cases. In the 13 days since May the 1st, and in the month since the roughly month since the reopening, the cases have gone up. So looking at this, what I can tell you is that the state of Texas is definitely seeing an increase in cases. And the longer that they're open, the longer the more the cases are going to go up. In fact, the last 6 days in a row, Texas has seen 1,000 or more new cases per day. And additionally, the death toll in the state of Texas is starting to increase as well. Prior to May the 1st, on average, the state of Texas would see, you know, maybe 15 deaths, maybe 30, you know, maybe 40 on a bad day. Since May the 1st, 8 of the 13 days have been above 50. Now, 50 doesn't seem like a lot of deaths, but again, it's a trend line. The indication of the trend line is that both the number of new cases and the mortality rate in Texas are slowly going up. And before the lockdown ended, that wasn't happening. They were both going down. So I'm not ready to say that the Texas opening up early is going to lead to a lot more deaths. I'm not going to say that because I don't know. But what I do know is that since the state of Texas opened up, there have been significant increases in the daily rates of infection. So, you know, make of that what you will. So, you know, I talked about that a little longer than I wanted to, but I also thought that I would touch base with some of the antibody studies that I've been looking at. So one of the things that you hear from most people that are against the lockdowns or that aren't happy with the way the government has handled the COVID-19 situation is that you'll hear this a lot. You'll hear people say, oh, well, obviously many, many more people have been infected. And once we know the true number, then we'll know that this virus wasn't really that big of a deal. So here's your bad news for the day. We now have three separate studies, one from Spain, one from France, and one from here in the U.S. And all three studies show that the spread across the population for the coronavirus is less than 10%. In fact, it's significantly less than 10% in the U.S. So let's talk about Spain first. So this is from Reuters.com, the Reuters news agency. And the headline is, Spanish antibody study suggests 5% of the population affected by coronavirus. So let me read you the first paragraph here. Preliminary results from a nationwide coronavirus antibody study showed on Wednesday that about 5% of the overall Spanish population had contracted the novel virus. The result points to 2.3 million of Spain's 45 million population being affected by the virus. If without symptoms in many cases, considerably more than the official count of 230,000 cases. So, might sound like good news, right? That Spain only has 230,000 cases, and it seems that 2.3 million people have definitely been exposed to the virus. Well, yeah, it sounds like good news until you think about the fact that Spain needs to reach 80% of the population being exposed to reach herd immunity. And that's any country. A lot of the virus experts have come out and said that Spain, France, Italy, the US, any country out there needs about 80% exposure to reach herd immunity. All right, so let's think about that for a minute. If Spain has had 230,000 positive cases, which means 2.3 million people, and yet they've had a death toll of about 25,000, that tells us that the real death toll for the virus is about 1 to 1.5%, which, okay, no, it doesn't sound like a big deal, except if you extrapolate that number to the United States, that means you're talking about 3.5 to 4 million people that would die from the virus for us to reach herd immunity. That's a significant number of people. And furthermore, it kind of throws cold water on the theory that the virus has been out there and we've all been exposed to it and the numbers of people who had it are really high. According to this study, they're not. So let's go and look at the second study, right? So this one's from The Telegraph, which is a British newspaper. And the headline on this one is, France says coronavirus data and tests show no herd immunity across population. So, according to a recent antibody study in France, 4.4% of the French population, or 2.8 million people, have been infected, according to findings by the Pasteur Institute, published in the journal Science, and based on models applied to hospital and death data. Even in the worst-hit areas of France, the eastern suburbs of Paris, the infection rate only reaches between 9 and 10% on average, the research found. So that's a problem. That means that on average, 4 to 5% of the population in these countries in Europe that have been heavily hit by the virus have been infected. That means they're not even 10% of the way they need to get to herd immunity, which means that their current death tolls aren't even 10% of what they would be overall. Looking at the French numbers, if that held true and you needed to, you know, get to herd immunity, you'd be looking at something on the order of 250,000 people in France dying from the coronavirus. That's a significant number of people in a country. You know, same thing in Spain. Spain, you'd be looking at 200,000. Italy, you'd be looking at, you know, close to 400,000 deaths. A country like Belgium, you know, which only has a population of 9 million, and their mortality rate is creeping up on 20%, you'd be looking at something on the order of, you know, 400,000 people out of a country of, you know, 10 million. That's a lot. That's a lot of people. You know, that would put a significant dent in the country's population. So those are what some antibody studies from France and Spain are saying. Now here's the one from the U.S. Now this is from the Los Angeles Times. Again, I'm not here to talk about the source. I'm reporting information. So the antibody study was conducted with the Major League Baseball, with the American Baseball Association. So basically Major League Baseball, which is the league that sponsors professional level baseball in the United States, did a study of 5,600 employees of Major League Baseball spread out over 26 cities. And these were employees that were, you know, players, owners. They went all the way down to people that were, you know, hot dog vendors or custodians that cleaned the stadiums. They basically did a test at the population across Major League Baseball. Now, this isn't a huge sample, but this is a good statistical sample because it is scattered all over the country, like I said, 26 different cities in 19 states. And what they found is of the 5,603 employees who were tested for antibodies, only 60 tested positive. So that is a positive rate of just over 1%. So what that means is that, according to this study, and this is the first large-scale study done in the U.S., less than 1% of the U.S. population may have been exposed to the virus. Now, why is that a problem? Well, that's a problem because that means that we are so far away from herd immunity that our mortality rate, our numbers of people that would die, our numbers of people that would get infected with this are still have nowhere to go but up. Now, this study is significant because it was conducted by Dr. J. Bhattacharya. He's a professor of medicine at Stanford. Now, he's famous. You may have heard of him. He actually had released a editorial back in late March saying that he believed that the exposure rate was significantly higher than researchers thought that it was in the United States. So he sponsored this this test, this antibody study, and it's actually the exact opposite of what he believed previously. And he even says it in the article. He even says, you know, this is the reason why you do science and you don't just make guesses like I did when I wrote that article. The epidemic has not gotten very far in the U.S., he said. We have quite a ways to go. So basically what it means is that overall the U.S. has a long way to go to reach herd immunity. And we're not going to get there anytime soon. So let's talk about something other than the virus for a few minutes, okay? Let's talk about elections. So in November of 2020, the United States will have its next presidential election. Between now and then, there were two special elections to fill congressional seats that had been vacated by the congressperson that previously had held them. One was in Wisconsin and one was in California. Now, the one in Wisconsin was in the 7th District of Wisconsin, which is in the northern part of the state. And it was a Republican district. And the contest was between a conservative Republican that supports President Trump and a liberal Democrat who opposes most of Mr. Trump's or President Trump's policies. So the Republican, a man named Tom Tiffany, won the special election by 15 percentage points. So that was a seat that the Republicans previously held. And the special election was to see who would hold it now, and the Republicans won it by 15%, which is only a few points less Then President Trump won that congressional district in 2016. So that's significant because it shows that at least in that district in Wisconsin, many of the voters are still voting for politicians that support President Trump. So Wisconsin might not be in as much play for the election in November as people think it is. So, you know, we'll find out. And then the in California, the 25th district, which was represented by a woman named Katie Hill, she actually had to resign earlier this year because it was found that she had had inappropriate sexual relations with people on her staff. So she resigned, and the it went to a special election, which was earlier this week. Now, she was a Democrat. So that was a district that had been controlled by the Democrats. The Republicans ran a gentleman named Mike Garcia. Mike Garcia was a military veteran. He was Hispanic. He spoke Spanish. He was actually very popular as a state politician in that part of California. And he ran against a woman named Christy Smith. Now, he won by 12 points. That's significant. That is a blue district. So what that means is that is a district that has supported Democrats for most of the last 20 years. In fact, it's the first state, it's the first congressional seat in California that flipped from control by the Democrats to control by the Republicans in 22 years. In 22 years, there hasn't been that kind of a political party flip of a seat. Mostly, it's been Republicans slowly losing seats in California. So that's the first win in a blue seat by the Republican Party in California in 28 years. So again, it doesn't give me all the answers, but it tells me that President Trump might not be in as much trouble as people think he is. You know, that's just what I think. I think, you know, about that overall. Nobody knows for certain what's going to happen with the election in November, but I guess we're going to find out. And then the last story of the day is kind of interesting. Apparently, the Department of Defense has admitted that UFOs are real. Not only are UFOs real, the Department of Defense doesn't know what they are. So this is based on a series of videos that were made in 2004 and 2005 that were recently declassified. So yeah, that should have been big news. That's crazy. The United States Department of Defense confirmed that UFOs are real and they don't know what they are. I don't know about the rest of you, but that's that should be bigger news. So anyway, this was episode 2. I hope you liked it. Episode 3 should probably be coming in a couple of days. As always, comments, questions, feedback, please leave it. And I really hope you enjoyed the program. That's all for the Arctic Free Press today.